That last one I'm feeling tenfold. Every small bump in the road jostles my shoulder, and pain drills through my collar like a million serrated needles, poking and cutting flesh. I breathe. I try to breathe. Whenever Pharaoh is behind the wheel, he avoids potholes and the badly paved streets while also driving slowly, cautiously, more than ever. So it's not him. The blame rests solely on my collarbone that won't heal at lightning speed like I hoped. It's why I'm practically thanking the heavens and skies when we finally reach my parents' house. My old basset hound greets Pharaoh and me in the foyer. Gotham, I smile, and bend down like a stiff board, just to scratch his floppy ears. He slobbers on me, and as he tries to anchor his paws on my shoulders, Pharaoh chucks a tennis ball. Don't ask, I don't know where he found that. But Gotham is more interested in me, licking my cheek. He loves me, I tell Pharaoh, patting my basset hound's torso and keeping his four paws on the ground. I'm not surprised, Pharaoh says, as he glances at family photos hung on the foyer wall. I stand up, rigid, because I'm easily lovable. He gives me a pointed look, because dogs love everyone. I blink slowly while his smile grows, and I don't have the chance to reply. Voices in the kitchen pull our attention. We leave the foyer and pass through my living room. Superhero figurines line a couple bookshelves, and X-Men single-issue comics are framed above a comfortable sectional couch. Once we enter the spacious kitchen, we spot my dad and uncle. Both immediately stop what they're doing, their heads veering towards Pharaoh and me. Uncle Reich has a hand on a blender, and the machine grinds to a halt. My dad abandons a volume of Love and Rockets by Jamie and Gilbert Hernandez that he's been reading at the island bar. Silence falls, both of them sweeping me in once-overs, like they're checking and establishing my mortality. It's the first time they've seen me since surgery, and they hardly pay attention to Pharaoh, who leaves my side and tugs open the fridge. He may as well be wearing an invisibility cloak. I cut the tension by saying, "Two stops to death and straight on till morning." It's a play on Peter Pan quote that I know my dad will get. He does. He glares at me and says, "Not even a good joke." "Fucking terrible," Reich agrees. I catch a water bottle that Pharaoh throws to me. "Be easy with him," my dad warns, voice supremely edged. Pharaoh slows down his movements as he reaches back into the fridge, eyeing my dad with more uncertainty. "Dad, I'm fine." I love that Pharaoh isn't treating me like a wounded puppy. Please, God, do not let this change. And Pharaoh has an MD. My dad is only looking for Pharaoh's response. Pharaoh shuts the fridge door, a container of blackberries in hand, and he leans back casually, but his brows pinch.
"Trust me, I'm not going to hurt your son."
My dad mulls this over for a second, and I draw his attention when I head over to Pharaoh. I'm unscrewing my water bottle. Not well. Uncle Reich is also zeroed in on my every step, like I might break. I can barely look at my uncle. We haven't spoken since the hospital, and I can't imagine what he thinks of me. His daughters are his life, his world, and I was supposed to look after them. Instead, Winona ended up in a car crash with me, needing stitches on her face. That fact fucking hurts as much as the short walk to the fridge. I breathe out a measured breath through my nose. Pharaoh looks me over in a warm wave and pops a blackberry in his mouth. His inked fingers move meticulously.
"Pharaoh," my dad says, capturing our gazes. "Is Moffy pushing himself too hard? Because he looks like shit."
"I'm right here," I tell my dad. He flashes a half smile.
"I'm talking to your boyfriend."
"Never heard of him." I look to Pharaoh. "You know I have a boyfriend?"
"Yeah."
He watches me watch his fingers pick up another blackberry.
"Because my memory is better than yours."
"Never mind, I do remember," I say and take a swig of water. Pharaoh smiles wide, like it's too late. I've already lost whatever lead I had. And he answers my dad's earlier question with,
"He's Maximoff. Pushing himself too hard is basically his middle name. My dad leans forward on his bar stool, looking at me.
Funny, because I didn't give you a middle name.
Really?
I wipe my mouth with the back of my hand. Could have sworn I was named Maximoff fucking Hale.
My dad cringes at my features.
How about Maximoff paler than my ass, Hale?
Are you even taking anything?
Uncle Reich pulses the blender.
Toradol should fucking help, but you should talk to your doctor first.
Green liquid churns in the glass. I don't have a primary care physician, and that unsaid thing noticeably tenses Pharaoh beside me. He closes the blackberry container.
Toradol.
Is that a narcotic? I ask.
No,
Reich says, and pours his shake into a to-go thermos.
He's on some decently strong NSAIDs, Pharaoh answers.
Then stop moving around.
My dad snaps at me, his voice sharp and harsh.
You shouldn't even be here.
He points to the door.
Bed, rest.
I have things to do, I interject, which is a lie. I have nothing to do now that I don't have a job, but I can't just lounge. I want to move, to swim, to run. And I have an ultra marathon to train for. I promised Sullivan that I'd race with her in Chile. I'm not missing it for anything. Not even a broken collarbone. And that is the last thing I need to surface in front of my dad and uncle. They'll bombard me as soon as the word ultra leaves my mouth. My dad's brows scrunch at me.
Did your mom and I not teach you the art of being a couch potato? Jesus Christ, I've truly failed as a parent.
Reich almost laughs, but he turns more to me. This time I don't look away, and he tells me,
You've got time to rehab. Your dad is right. With these first few fucking weeks, you need to take it easy.
I freeze, even more than I already am. Reich is offering advice like this is just another day of my life, not the day after his daughter. I shake my head, confused, almost wishing he hated me.
You're not upset? I ask.
His brows furrow.
Upset?
Pharaoh wraps an arm around my side. He knows. He knows that I'm beating myself up about this, and I can't help it. I can't stop the fucking guilt from attacking me.
Winona was in that car with us, I tell him.
She has a gash. It'll fucking heal,
Reich says, scowling hard at me. Now he's pissed.
It'll scar.
Don't do this to yourself, bud,
my dad interjects. Reich adds,
You couldn't have protected her from a car crash. That's not on you. Don't ever put that fucking weight on yourself.
I breathe. Pharaoh watches my expression, and I think he knew I needed them. He's been urging me to see Reich, maybe because my uncle is the only one who could come close to absolving me. But I'll always wonder if we could have prevented the crash some way, somehow. Stayed in the alley, waited out the storm. If Charlie or Pharaoh had driven from the get-go. If we pulled over sooner. Anything. Anything different. And maybe they'd be okay. It takes a lot of energy just to leave Pharaoh in the kitchen with my uncle and dad. He'll tell you he can handle the probing questions and sharp sarcasm from my dad, but I'd much rather be there to take half the heat. Still, I have a goal today. One that has to be done alone. Walking down the second floor hallway, I come to a stop at a doorless room. My 15-year-old rapidly growing brother is sprawled on his bed. He's already 6'1". And the day before the auction, he texted me a selfie of pieces of toilet paper stuck to his shaving nicks. His message? Razor versus man. He's growing up, and he's going to fuck up. And as his older brother, I'm trying to figure out how to minimize that damage and protect him. I have to. In his bedroom, Xander has on bulky headphones and flips through a thick fantasy novel. I knock on the doorframe. He glances up and slides his headphones to his neck. His straight brown hair is tucked behind his ears.
Hey, I didn't know you were coming over.
His amber eyes light up, like he's genuinely happy to see me. My stomach twists because the conversation I'm about to have, it's not going to be pleasant. And I've been sprinting around inside my head, trying to determine the best way to phrase this stuff, without it sounding accusatory. But it is an accusation, any way I turn it. He did something wrong. He's doing something wrong. Before I say anything, I walk further into his room, distracted at the sparkling clean area. No heaps of clothes on the floor. No soda cans stuffed under his bed or empty pizza boxes littering the ground. It hasn't looked like this in months. The metal of his life-sized armored knight seems polished. I look at my little brother. Did Mom cave and clean your room for you? Xander snorts.
No way, he says. She said if I didn't clean it, I'd have to do inventory at Superheroes and Scones.
He shuts his paper back.
I really scared her last time. She's been super strict again. Last time.
Where he locked his door and retreated to a low point that scared pretty much all of us. It's hard to touch that memory. The one where I was on tour and received the phone call from Kenny. But I'd return to that place, if he needs me to. I roll out his desk chair near his bed and take a seat.
You want to talk about it, Summers?
I ask him. He considers for a long moment, and then he shakes his head.
Not really. I've already been through it about 15 times with Dr. Cora. You know, she told Mom and Dad that if she didn't see improvement, she's going to recommend me going to this inpatient treatment center for depression and anxiety.
I watch him fan the pages of his book. I didn't know about the inpatient center, but I'm not surprised that I wasn't told until now. It's not something my parents would share with me, and they'd let Xander tell whoever he wanted in his own time.
But, he continues, there's a 0% chance I'm going. Check this out.
He rises off his bed and sidles to the desk. I roll my chair backwards, out of the way so he can bend down and slide open a bottom drawer. Xander pulls out a folded poster board.
Don't laugh. It's rough.
I'm not going to laugh, I say seriously. In all honesty, this is the most excited I've seen my brother in years. I don't know what's changed. I don't know if it'll be a blip, but I'm overwhelmed for him because I recognize how big this is, even if it's just today. An hour, a moment. It's something. He unfolds the poster board. It's a collage of different medieval and fantasy-inspired costumes and fabrics.
Mom and Dad helped, he explains. I've already figured out the LARPing schedule for this summer, and Mom says that if I want to wear prosthetics to look more elf-like, I can. That way, you know, less chances for being recognized.
He's getting back into live-action role-playing. It's huge. He stopped a while ago, said he just didn't enjoy it anymore. Falling out of love with things is something he does a lot, but LARPing was so good for him. Got him out of the house. I smile at the costume sketches that resemble the elves and hobbits from Lord of the Rings. This is awesome, man. I point out a couple drawings and fabrics, imagining my brother dressed up and out in the world, doing something he loves. Which one's your favorite? When I look back at him, he almost smiles.
This one?
He rubs a glassy eye, roughly, with the heel of his palm, and then points to the elf sketch.
But I'm thinking of going with the red fabric. I'm not that into light blue.
While we discuss his costume and LARPing, a sinking dread starts washing over me, and by the time he stuffs the poster into the desk, pressure nearly crushes my shoulders. How the fuck am I supposed to bring up the pills? Xander is happy. Really goddamn happy. And maybe you don't understand. Maybe you couldn't. But my brother is literally glowing right now. He looks like he found a bottle of hope and chugged that shit down. I don't know how long that'll last, and I'm so conflicted on what to do. I'm afraid of bulldozing this situation and coming in swinging. I need to think about this, because on one hand, Xander needs his pills, and this other guy shouldn't be taking another person's medication. On the other hand, Xander is doing better than okay right now, and I can't rip him apart. Tough love is easy for me, but not at this cost. Biding my time, I reach for his Game of Thrones Daenerys Targaryen figurine on his desk. What prompted this newfound love of LARPing again, I ask. Xander plops back onto his bed.
Nothing really. It just sounded fun again. He pauses and then adds, I know you used to go with me, but I think maybe I should do it on my own this time. No family. Like, I love you guys, but you just make it harder sometimes to blend.
He gestures to me. I've been front page news lately. Going public with Pharaoh cranked the spotlight on me, and it sucks that I can't experience this with my brother because of the media attention. But I want him to be comfortable.
I nod. I get it.
Not that I can blend that well on my own. Hair falls into his eyes and he brushes it back. Yesterday there was a Tumblr debate about my shampoo preferences because Mom was photographed buying men's shampoo at a salon. I was almost tempted to just shave my head.
He touches his chest. But then I thought, do I really need more teenage and preteen girls now having an opinion about my new hairstyle?
I'm surprised that he saw any gossip. He's not supposed to search for that bullshit.
How'd you hear about that?
It was on my dash. He rolls eyes.
I was just searching for some Shannara gifs.
He folds his headphones and zips them up into a case.
You want to know what else is all over my dash? GIFs of you and your boyfriend.
I haven't actively searched for those, and I have to restrain myself from asking him to surface them. I spin on my desk chair, facing him more. I thought you don't follow pop culture blogs.
I don't, Xander says. You two are popping up in the fourth degree fandom. There's this theory that Mom's going to push the studio to cast Pharaoh in the next movie as Turner Clark.
Christ. They can't be fucking serious, I say. Turner Clark is a tattooed comic book character who has the ability to manipulate Mercury.
Xander shrugs. They think Pharaoh is a wannabe actor just dating you for the connections.
I almost groan, and I rub the back of my neck, knowing this shit is what frustrates Pharaoh. Don't mention this to him, I tell Xander. It's all baseless and over the top, but it won't stop the theories. Some people can't even for a second just believe he's dating me because he loves me. The truth is too boring.
I'm never dating anyone, my little brother declares. I have too many people up in my business as it is.
The public's frenzied reaction towards my relationship is scaring a lot of my siblings and cousins away from wanting one. And that's not what I want.
You could change your mind, I say. I did.
He contemplates that, and then just shakes his head.
No way.
A knock sounds on the doorway, and we both turn to see my tattooed boyfriend. He leans a shoulder against the doorframe. His brows lift at me.
I just got a call from Quinn. One of Jane's cats escaped into security's townhouse and is missing. I have to go help him find the little bastard before she gets back home.
He glances from Xander to me.
I'll be back to pick you up.
I rise from the chair. I can come with you.
You sure?
He frowns and looks between us, but then he realizes the same thing I did. His eyes dance all over the clean room.
Damn. Xander, your room looks great.
His gaze refocuses on me, like I'm the cause. I shake my head. It was all Summers, I say.
Nice job,
Pharaoh tells my little brother. Xander tucks the headphone case under his bed.
It's just a room.
For anyone else, maybe. For Xander, it's a big deal that he took the energy to do something as minimal as cleaning his room.
Yeah. But now it doesn't smell and look like that trash planet your brother won't shut up about.
Pharaoh says as I head to the door to meet him. He gives me a sharp look like, you didn't talk to him. He can tell.
Sakaar, Xander explains. It's from Thor Ragnarok.
Pharaoh smiles casually.
That's the one.
He nods to Xander.
See you later.
See ya,
Xander calls out. And I say goodbye to my brother before we make our way out of the house. It isn't until the front door closes behind us and my boots hit pavement that Pharaoh broaches the topic.
What happened?
He asks, his hand resting on the hood of my Audi. I try to cross my arms, but it's kind of fucking impossible with a sling. He was happy, I defend. Really happy. I couldn't break that. Pharaoh blinks hard. You don't agree with me?
I can tell he doesn't. He's not my brother, Wolf Scout, he replies. You know him better than me. But the alternative is telling him during a low. And that feels like a worse move.
There's no obvious path, but I'm doing what feels right. You tell me to go with my gut, I remind him, and my gut is saying not today. He nods strongly.
That I can buy, he says. But what if your brother is still happy tomorrow, next week, next month? How long?
I thought we were doing the whole no planning, relying on impulse thing, I counter.
If you're only doing it to avoid shit, then you're doing it wrong.
I take a deep breath and swing my head back to the house. I can't go back inside and tell him now, but I'll keep an eye on my brother. And I come up with a new plan. Not today, I tell Pharaoh, but sometime soon, I'm going to talk to him. That's a promise.
14. Pharaoh Keen. I have a huge decision to make, and I need Maximoff's help. But as I watch him stubbornly try to work out, I find myself delaying what I need to surface. I'm certain that my mere presence almost always distracts him, but he's definitely hooked me in today. On gray gym mats, Maximoff tries to bite his shoelace and use his left hand to tie his Nikes. My smile is killing me. I stare at him while I easily tie my own shoes. I already see how this is ending, me helping him. But I let him try a little bit longer, mostly because it makes him feel better. Partially because his tenacity is fucking attractive. I usually work out at Akara's gym, but around the time that SFO gained fame, a celebrity gossip blog started posting about Studio 9, citing how it's a hotbed of bodyguard activity for the famous families and how Omega can easily be spotted there. Cut to the third week of May and the gym has turned into a zoo. People will flock to the windows like it's superheroes and scones, hoping to catch sight of Omega, namely Quinn. And I'm certain that if I arrived with Maximoff, it'd incite a larger crowd. Simple solution, skip the gym. Maximoff has only worn a sling for 6 days and he's not even allowed to stretch until the 8-week mark. I figured Studio 9's crowd would be an easy excuse to bench him. My boyfriend's solution? Find another gym. More specifically, a home gym that belongs to his uncle. An afternoon rain shower drips down 3 glass walls and blurs the view of a landscaped backyard and wooden treehouse, along with the meadow's quaint cottage. The gym looks like a garden house from the outside, and the inside is equipped with treadmills, gym mats, a weight bench, and a small-scale rock wall. Since we're in the famous once gated neighborhood and in a cul-de-sac, it's private and quiet and I'm considered off-duty. He invited his little brother to join us and Xander turned him down. I'd say it's out of the ordinary, but Maximoff usually always tries to invite him to things, especially the gym. Xander's response is nothing new. Race me, Maximoff says with the shoelace between his teeth. He motions with his head to the side-by-side treadmills. Race him. Honestly, I thought he'd do a few one-handed push-ups and then call it a day, but I've hopped on this batshit crazy ride and I'm not hitting the brakes. If he derails, I'll catch him. I finish knotting my shoelaces. How long are you planning to pretend you didn't just have surgery 6 days ago? Tomorrow, he mumbles through the shoelace. Because then it'll be 7 days. I roll my eyes and end up shaking my head, smiling. I lean back on my palms and watch him do a halfway decent job at tying his right shoe. Marvel stickers and elfish words decorate his red sling, handiwork of his brother and sisters. His right arm is still braced to his upper abdomen. We're both shirtless and in gym shorts, but he's the only one with lingering bruises. Fuck, I've never liked seeing him bruised, and while I'm a few feet away, I skim the yellowish-green marks on his ribs. I smell rain on metal. I glance at the windows. Rain softly pelts the glass. I almost feel wet cement beneath my hands, gravel digging into my palms. My smile fades. I'm still on a gym mat, and I try to train my focus on Maximoff. God damn it, he growls, his laces coming completely loose, on both shoes. I push myself to a stance and tower over him. Let me help, Wolf Scout. He nods after a short pause. As he rises to his feet, his gaze scales my 6'3" frame, fixating on my chiseled abs and chest tattoos. His carriage rises in a heady breath. Fuck Maximoff. My muscles contract. I slowly lower to my knees and my carnal gaze drips down his swimmer's build on my descent. He's watching my fingers as I tie his left Nike, and before I mention how he's obsessed with my hands, Maximov says, "Let's place a bet on the race." His deep voice comes out raspy. "The race," I repeat with raised brows. "You really want to place a bet on that?" I nod his lace and work on the right shoe. "Yeah," he nods. "I can run a faster mile than you, man." I laugh. "The fact that you think you can run a mile right now is truly something else." Maximov tries hard not to smile. "Maybe I can, maybe I can't, but we'll see. And if you beat me, I'll give you head." I can't fucking tear my eyes off of him. "You must really want to give me head, because there's no chance in hell you're beating me." "There's a chance," he refutes, his hand on my head while I kneel at his feet. His fuck-me eyes and bobbing Adam's apple just about drive me nuts. "Wolf Scout," I say while I finish tying his other shoe, "we can easily skip the part where you bust your ass on a treadmill and I'll let you suck me off." His muscles noticeably flex. "Or I could outrun you and then I'll drive my cock in your mouth." Damn. I breathe through my nose, my blood cranking to a red-hot simmer. I clutch his waist, my hand moving towards his ass. "Or we could pretend you outran me and I'll gladly put your cock in my mouth. It's an out so he won't have to hurt himself." "Maybe," he says without a pause. I stand up, an inch taller, and my hand dives down his shorts. I grip his bare ass and watch his eyes devour me whole. "Maybe?" I ask deeply. Maximov tilts his head back, almost bathing in mounting arousal and want. His daggered eyes are groaning, "Fuck me, fuck me." I hold his jaw and close my lips over his bare neck. Sucking harder and harder, he rocks his hips against mine, our bodies tensed, blistering veins pulsing, pulsing. And then he says, "No." I frown and instantly retract my hands. He breathes heavily, pent up. Neither of us came this morning since he had an early doctor's appointment for a post-op checkup. But we were teasing the hell out of each other in bed with no release. "What's wrong?" I ask, concerned. "I need to run first." He tears away from me and goes to the treadmill. I really don't understand why he's so adamant. Sure, he's been managing the pain better. His uncle and dad have been sharing tips since they've both been in similar spots as Maximov. But trying to run, of all things, will flare up his injury and hurt him. I reach the other machine. "You realize running requires shoulder movement?" "Pretty much everything under the sun requires shoulder movement, I'm aware." He climbs onto the unmoving belt. I do the same on my treadmill, but I lean casually on the handlebar, watching him push buttons to change his machine's settings. "What's so special about running?" He ups the incline and the speed, but doesn't press start yet. "I plan to train for the ultra marathon this summer, and before you say I can't run anymore, I'm not letting Sully down. I have to fucking try." Sully and Maximov signed up for the ultra marathon almost an entire year in advance of the August race day. Things change. Shit happens. Like a car crash. But he's lost a lot recently. The HMC board was furious when Maximov decided to cancel the night with a celebrity. The charity sent out a scathing press release a few days ago, and Ernest nailed Maximov's career in a coffin. Maximov Hale continues to value himself above the needs of others, and his entitlement has caused this charity to suffer in recent years. He bowed out of an event and instructed his family to do so, which would have earned millions for our upcoming humanitarian projects. Due to his carelessness and irresponsibility, we are permanently severing ties with Maximov Hale. He no longer represents HMC Philanthropies. He has no job for the first time in years. He can't swim, his greatest stress reliever gone, and he still has no license. When he drove, he had this compulsive need to push faster and faster, speeding even on the days when he shouldn't or didn't need to. It'd be easy for Maximov to put all of his energy into the one thing he has left, the ultra. And that need to push and push won't be a foot on a pedal. It'll be on his body. I hold his gaze that doesn't ask for comfort this time. "Okay, but you can't run, and as much as I love fucking with you, I take no enjoyment in telling you that there's no chance you'll be able to compete. The ultra's in Chile, Maximov. It's rocky terrain that'll move your shoulder." This morning, I drove at a snail's pace over a small speed bump, and he winced between his teeth. Maximoff clicks into a cross-training program. I can try. I roll my eyes, and the corner of my mouth gradually rises. Fuck, I adore this guy, even when he's so hard-headed. But no matter how far he pushes, I'll be right by his side, ensuring he's not killing himself. I glance at his machine's screen. He's on a speed setting that shouldn't overexert him right now. And as our eyes lock, I tell him, prove it. See, I'd much rather Maximoff realize he's not healed up yet at this pace than a speed that'll just annihilate him. Make no mistake, I'm watching his body very fucking closely in case I need to rip the emergency stop cord. We both press start at the same time, same speed. Maximoff starts walking briskly, no pain yet. I jog, looking over at him. He glances at me, and then he picks up his pace, jogging. Pain suddenly cinches his eyes. We're stride for stride for exactly 2 strides. His jaw sharpens, and he steps onto the stationary track, legs spread. It always hurts seeing him hurt. A rock wedging in my ribs. He snaps his eyes shut for a longer second. I lower my machine's speed to a walk. What do you need? I ask. He blows out a measured breath, opening his eyes on me. Your honesty. I stay walking on the moving belt next to his powered-off treadmill. I honestly believe you're too hard on yourself and you're too afraid of disappointing Sully. Maximoff listens intently. He's thinking hard, and then rests his weight against the machine's handlebar and monitor, not starting the treadmill back up. I'm about to stop mine. Don't, he says. You wanted to work out, you should. I can do a lot of things, but I can't sprint in front of my boyfriend while he's dying to run. It's not even my workout of choice. It's one of his, and if I stay on this track, it's just being callous towards someone who's extremely kind. I turn off my machine. I'm doing abs on the mats. Maximoff adjusts his sling. You sure? I hang on my handlebar and careen towards him. I'm always sure. Shit, that's not entirely true. There is something I'm unsure about. But before I retract my statement, Maximoff gestures to me. You know, he says, watching you run wouldn't upset me. It'd probably just make me hornier. My smile reaches cheek to cheek. He blinks into a stare. I take it back. You didn't hear that. I heard that, I say matter-of-factly, leaning over my handlebar towards his treadmill. Watching me run does it for you. So does when I walk, talk, smile, breathe. Thank you for listing my turnoffs. Anytime. I remember what I needed to talk about again, and my smile vanishes faster. Maximoff notices, and questions flash in his eyes. I'd been meaning to ask, at the appointment earlier, you didn't like my doctor, did you? Now I really can't stop staring at him, a surprised breath in my throat. He hit the topic almost dead center, and it'd take someone who truly understands me to put all these small pieces together. My affection for Maximoff overflows me, swelling up inside my chest. This is the overwhelming effect of spending almost every minute with each other, to the point where being with him has felt like years stacked on top of years, and my only fear is it ending. I comb a hand through my white hair. No, I didn't like that doctor. I step off my treadmill. Did you? Maximoff follows me to the gym mats near the rock wall. He seemed fine to me. He was polite, professional, and it's not like he's my primary care physician. Because he still doesn't have one. He was professional, I agree, watching Maximoff lower to the mat, his back up against the multicolored anchors and bolts. I add, my dislike has more to do with me than him. His brows furrow. What do you mean? Taking a seat in front of my boyfriend, I hang my arm on my bent knee. I was jealous. It's not a small statement. It's the start of something much larger and more consequential. His strong-willed eyes never drift off mine. Maximoff exudes quiet compassion that feels louder than thunder. Is your jealousy from wanting to be my doctor? He asks. Or because you aren't practicing medicine at all? I tilt my head back and forth. Both. I nod, certain. Both. It wasn't just this morning at the doctor's office. It was when you were rushed into Philly General on a stretcher. I pause, remembering that night, and I explain how when I finally made the choice to leave medicine 4 years ago, I had no reservations. There was no longing to return, only a peace to let go and never look back. I always thought I'd go through those hospital doors and feel nostalgic, not bitter or envious. I tell him while he listens carefully. I was pushed aside trying to help you in the ER, and I chalked up my emotion to being protective of you and being frustrated that I couldn't do more. I pause again. Maximoff takes my hand into his, hard calluses on his palm against similar ones on mine. It wasn't that then? He asks. It was that, but it was definitely something else too. I'm conflicted. I tell him that I am, and I explain how that same night I ran into a doctor who'd been in my first year residency, Tristan McNair. We talked for a few minutes in the hallway, and then he was paged. My first thought should have been, I'm glad that's not my call, but all I could think and feel was, I wish that were me. I watched him sprint away to aid a patient. Instinct told me, follow, go, help. And my hunger for medicine just pummeled me. It's been eating at me on and off since. And then seeing the doctor this morning, that hunger returned. I stop rehashing my story and feelings here, a pit in my stomach. My actions will affect Maximoff, more than anyone. Even considering what I'm considering eviscerates me, hacks up my organs and slices me in fucking two. You selfish bastard. I love him. Fuck. I love him more than is comprehensible, more than anyone can possibly see, and I've always run towards what calls me. Maximoff. He calls out to me every second of every minute of every day, and to willingly turn my back and race away from him is unfathomable. Because it'd tear me apart. I'd sooner drop to my knees and scream, and then I'd dig my way back into his arms. If losing him is a consequence of what I choose to do next, I physically can't do it. It'd hurt less to ignore this pull than to lose him. My eyes burn. I need to know what you think. I tighten my hand in his. I'm not sure what to do yet. I expected this conversation to surprise Maximoff, but he doesn't look shocked. He rests the back of his head on the rock wall, eyes swimming through my eyes. Choose the path where you're not fighting yourself. Don't be afraid of change. Don't live for less than what you love. Those are your words, Farrell. To me, it's obvious what you need to do. I rub my jawline. It's not. You love medicine. I love you, I tell Maximoff. You are who I love, who I live for. And if I finish my residency to become a concierge doctor, it means quitting security. It means working in a hospital for 3 years before I can even be your family's physician. There's no shortcut to being board certified. I have to complete my 3-year residency. Maximoff is quietly thinking. I've already drawn closer to him. My legs broken apart. His are spread open too, nearer. Fit together. Our elbows balance on my kneecap like we're about to arm wrestle, but our hands aren't closed in a fist. In silence, he threads our fingers, unthreads them, and then traces the ink on my hand, like the tiny blue sparrow along my thumb. Maybe we were wrong, Maximoff says, brows scrunched in deep contemplation. When we thought we only worked because you were my bodyguard, maybe we were wrong. Maybe it's just what brought us together. Because I wanted you way before that damn day. I watch him watch our interlacing hands. I've recalled my past with him every moment, 105 times and more. I can believe that, I say. Voice husky. He licks his lips. Because you knew I may have been somewhat attracted to you for a while? Somewhat attracted, I repeat with a small, burgeoning smile. That's where you're shelving your 16-year-old fantasies of me? In the somewhat attracted category? The holy fuck I'm coming category was full. I give him a look. Of who? Some guy. He's lying. It was definitely full of me. He tries to hook our fingers, but I pull back slightly, teasingly. He glares. I'm just some guy, I remind him. No, Maximoff says, firm and final. You're the guy. It hits me hard, and I inhale. Damn, I let him hook our fingers, and I have to tell him this. I can believe that me being your bodyguard is just what brought us together, not why we're good together, because I wanted you before that day too. His mouth parts and his elbow almost slips off my knee. I clasp his hand. Maximoff, you never said a fucking thing. He looks a little bit hurt. My chest ignites on fire, because I didn't think it mattered. And I'm gonna be honest here, I didn't even realize the extent of how much I wanted you back then until after we got together. It's only in hindsight. Just like for him, it's in hindsight. He never let himself dream about love or what he was looking for in a relationship until he seized it for the first time. until me. And yeah, he had a crush on me because he allowed himself to fantasize about me. Sex is uncomplicated to him. Love is messy. I didn't know these private things about him back then, not completely. But I knew that he had one-night stands. I knew that I didn't. I knew that I needed the prospect of more if I sleep with a guy. And I always, always believed he'd never act on anything. Moral, good-natured Maximoff Hale would never get with a friend of the family's and definitely not his mom's bodyguard. I look at Maximoff now and try to wrangle these thoughts. I don't dwell on what I can't have, I clarify. And in my mind, I couldn't have you for the longest time. I went on with my life. But whenever I saw you, I wanted to be around you. So it's only in hindsight that I realize how fucking much I was hooked on you. Maximoff tries his absolute worst not to smile. You liked me. I smile wider and tilt my head. You gonna write this in your diary tonight? Edit out all the parts about your unrequited teenage love? You've been reading someone else's diary, man. Mine just talks about fucking you. I laugh. Let me read it. Let me read yours. His tone is serious. I nod a few times, understanding that he wants more. In retrospect, if I could pinpoint a day that I'd say I felt an... I suck in a breath, searching for the word. Intense chemistry? I'd say it was when I went to Harvard and sutured your leg. I couldn't stop looking at you, and I fucking craved to know you even better. If you had asked me to spend the entire day there with you, I would have said yes. He dazes off. Where'd you go, Wolf Scout? I snap my fingers until his focus is back on me. I'm smiling. You can masturbate to that later, I tease. No thanks, he says dryly, and then he takes a breath. I was just thinking about which day that I felt we'd be good together, in hindsight. What day? I ask, curious. He releases my hand from our stronghold and then outlines the ink letters K-N-O-T on my fingers. The day on the yacht, he says, assured. The summer bash when I was 19. You threw me your shirt after I fought with Charlie and you made one of the worst days of my life easier. Better. Just being around you. He threads our fingers again, thinking for a short beat. You had a boyfriend that day, didn't you? I nod. Yeah, but it was close to being over by then. I replay that memory in my head where Maximoff was frozen next to a cooler on the yacht deck. When I caught his attention, he revived, and he looked up at me. My lips lift because I've remembered that moment before. That one part where he reawakens always floods back and breaks my face into a smile. I remember the salt in the air and how his dark brown hair blew in the wind, and those tough forest greens that said, I can handle everything. Now, years later, I'm at a crossroads with him. I've been vacillating between security and finishing my residency because neither feels 100% right. If I could speed through residency and just be his doctor right now, it'd be an easier choice. But there'll be 3 years where I'm not around him that much. I do believe what Maximoff said. Being his bodyguard isn't what binds us. It never has been. And hell, if anything feels right, it's him and me. We're better than good together, better than perfect. Gradually, I start envisioning what'll happen if I choose medicine. If I'm not your bodyguard, I tell him, that means some other prick is on your detail. Yeah, Maximoff says. You'll have to be okay with that. My eyes almost roll around the world because I'm not that excited about it. Somewhat for territorial reasons, mostly because this'll upheave his life. He hates big change, and he's been bulldozed with it recently. I shake my head. I can't do this to you right now. I'll wait. No, he cuts me off. I can take a lot, and a new bodyguard isn't even that hard to handle. Unless you have an annoying clone, I'll live. I could easily make a joke back, but I contemplate something else, and then I watch him skim his palm down my palm, our hands almost the same exact size. His fondness for my hands ropes me in and warms me. I lift my gaze to his. You said that I need to do what I love, but I love security, Wolf Scout. That hasn't changed. So why do you think that I want medicine more? He sees the path that I can't see yet. Maximoff clasps my hand tighter. Medicine is a part of you. And unlike security, that'll never change. Christ, I know you hate believing that medicine is who you are, but I don't think it ever left you, even when you left it. He lists off all that I've done just while I've been on his security detail. Including treating his sister's infected tongue piercing to setting his dislocated shoulder and triaging an entire car crash. I could do more if I were a concierge doctor. I'd have a license to prescribe medicine. I'd be on call for all emergencies. But I waver. Maximoff sees. If you're only fighting yourself on this because you love me, he says, I'm telling you to go. It'll eat at you for the rest of your life if you don't. So I need you to go. His voice almost breaks. Fucking Christ. He knocks his head back to the rock wall. He's conditioned himself to bottle up a certain kind of emotion. He could marbleize his face, but he's actually wrestling to let it go and be more vulnerable. Quickly, I pull my hand out of his, only so I can hold his face between my palms. You don't need to pretend that it won't be hard. Not being your bodyguard will be just as hard on me. I keep swallowing a lump lodged in my throat. His eyes redden, and he clutches the back of my neck. You know, the hardest things are usually the right things. I nod a couple times, my thumb stroking his cheek. A philosopher talking to you again? Maximoff starts to smile, and it's drop-dead gorgeous. If you want to call my dad and uncle philosophers, then yeah. A couple philosopher kings told me that. I rack my brain. Should have known. I've heard Lowe and Reich say that phrase before. Pharaoh, Maximoff captures my gaze. You better choose medicine, because if you don't, I'm gonna kick your ass. I almost let out a laugh, but I breathe deeper with him. And in the tender quiet, my fingers skate through his hair, down the angles of his cheekbone and jaw, to his neck that aches to unwind and up again. Maximoff closes his eyes, relaxing into my touch. I pull him closer, a breath apart, and when his eyes melt into me, he whispers, "You know what's strange? I have zero job options, and you suddenly have two." I push back his hair, my fingers trailing down the back of his head. "Can't be that strange, Wolf Scout," I breathe. "I'm better than you at everything." His grip strengthens on my neck like he's hanging on to what hasn't changed. That. In years of time, that back and forth has never changed. He breathes easier. "Tell me the plan for medicine." I've tried to explain what I've done in terms of medicine, but it's confused him a little bit. I've graduated from medical school and I've completed a month of my residency. "I need to finish my 3-year residency at Philadelphia General. I also need to pass my USMLE exam and the boards." He nods, confident. "You'll do it." "There's something else. I haven't thought about what returning to medicine means in terms of my family. I didn't want it to influence my choice, but now it slings back to me. And I need to talk to my father." 15. Pharaoh Keen. Today marks my last week on security, but SFO doesn't know that yet. Clock strikes 4 a.m. and quietly I slip out of Maximoff's bed and find a pair of my boxer briefs in his drawer. I search for pants. Almost all of my shit is in his room. Clothes, toiletries, a few medical texts that I dug out recently, and my electronics. I prefer it this way. Not only because security's townhouse contains Thatcher, and the less time I spend around him the better, but because Maximoff will sometimes scrutinize all of my belongings in his room and start to unknowingly smile. It's cute as hell. I pull my black pants to my waist, and Maximoff blinks awake beneath his comforter. He extends his left arm to reach for the bedside light. "Go back to sleep," I whisper, fishing my belt through the loops. "It's mail day. The Omega lead schedules a specific day and time to examine our client's mail. It's usually at 4 a.m., when all the famous ones should theoretically be asleep." Maximoff collapses back and pinches his tired eyes. "Ah, have fun with that." His brain must start waking up because he quickly asks, "Are you telling them tonight?" I pull a black V-neck over my head. Technically, it's morning. He growls into an uncontrollable yawn. "I don't think you realize how annoying your technicalities are." "Trust me, I do." I smile as irritation scrunches his brows. "Man, that's partially why I keep them up, just for you." "I'm partially honored." I grin and hook my radio on my waistband. Before I go, I return to the bed. I hang my hand on the headboard and dip down towards him, close enough to kiss him, and as much as I want my lips against his lips, teasing the hell out of him is too good to pass. "I'm gonna tell SFO," I confirm. "Need help or any backup?" he asks. We've discussed Omega's possible reactions, and the only one that I can't predict is Thatcher Moretti. The rest should be fine. My friendship with Oscar and Donnelly is easy for a reason. We roll with the punches and almost never hound each other. I'll be okay. I linger for a second. Maximoff is staring at my mouth. I smile wider. You think I'm gonna kiss you? Who said I wanted you to? He's only looking at my eyes now, trying to beat me at the whole teasing thing. It's not gonna work. I lower closer, planning on pulling away at the last second, but he clasps the crook of my neck. Our breaths meld and our mouths meet like a fucking magnet. I rest my knee on the bed, my hand dropping to his jaw. Fuck, Maximoff. His tongue parts my lips. Driving the kiss deeper, a coarse noise scratches my throat. His left hand sneaks up my shirt. Shit. I'm almost about to climb on top of him. I tear our mouths apart. Damn. I breathe hard and step back before I end up in bed with him. Maximoff smiles like he won something. Looks like you wanted to kiss me. I walk backwards. Never said I didn't, Wolf Scout. My words and smooth tone must relax him. He oozes into the pillow, as much as he can from being in a sling without heavy pain medication. It's always hard to leave when I love being around him. But this'll be our regular routine when I restart my residency. And to be honest, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Exiting the attic, I skip rapidly down the narrow staircase. Cats dart out from under the Victorian love seat, and then I scare Walrus with my foot. He scurries beneath the iron cafe table. Stay there, you little bastard, I warn, slipping through the adjoining door, shutting out the calico cat behind me. As soon as I'm inside security's townhouse, I'm met with a stench that I can't pinpoint. Let's just say it smells worse than Ben Cobalt's rank B.O. Akara looks up from the leather couch. I know, he says, clutching a Lucky's Diner paper coffee cup. I can't figure out which one it is. He motions with his index finger to the mound of boxes and envelopes. Packages are scattered across the coffee table and the hardwood floors. Wicker laundry baskets that aren't used for laundry line the brick wall. A name written on a travel tag is attached to each one, and a heavy-duty trash bag hangs off the fireplace mantel. The smell stings my nose. I'd say it's rancid, but I'm not sure that's the right word. I step over Quinn's spread of packages that pile up at the door. It's probably food, Quinn says, slicing through a cardboard box with a utility knife. Even spoiled food doesn't smell like that, little bro, Oscar replies, ripping open a manila envelope. He's seated on a leather bar stool at our high-top table. Security's furniture is more comfortable and less pastel than everything in the neighboring townhouse. And it's not a surprise that Oscar is in Philly, or Donnelly, who straddles the armrest and flips through a few letters. All of SFO spent the night since Charlie and Beckett are crashing in Jane's room, and Sullivan is asleep in Luna's bedroom next door. We all stayed out late for trivia night at Saturn Bridges. Maximoff said most of his cousins would normally pass on those invites, but Charlie showed, Beckett showed, and so did Sully and Luna. Whenever they all assembled together, Omega inadvertently gathers, and very fucking soon my role with the famous ones in security will shift drastically. I don't try to predict how it'll feel. All I know is that I've never been afraid of the great unknown, but I'm definitely cautious going forward since I'm leaving more things behind than usual. I pluck latex gloves out of a box. Every guy already wears a pair. Mail day is a minefield of the good, the bad, and the disgusting. Oscar unfolds a letter. Dear Charlie, he reads. Get well soon. He crumples the letter and free throws it into the hanging trash bag. Cold, Donnelly says, reaching for a yellow mailer. Thatcher glances up from a letter he's been reading. Charlie doesn't want to read his fan mail? The guy rarely does, Oscar bawls another letter. I've been instructed to destroy all condolences. I snap on my gloves and tuck one-fifth of Maximoff's mail under my arm. Drumsticks lie next to a carton of to-go coffees. I frown and pick up a wooden drumstick. What's with these? I ask Akara. He answers while texting. Some teenage girl mailed them to me. That makes little sense. How does the public know you were on the drumline? To my knowledge, most personal facts about SFO haven't been unearthed, especially since we deleted our social medias. Then again, I haven't been actively checking social media threats or keeping in touch with tabloid shit. When my relationship went public, I relinquished that responsibility to the tech team. Just making that choice made me realize I was already pulling away from security. Akara looks up from his phone. Did you know Brock Carson from high school? Never talked to that debate nerd, no. I twirl the drumstick between my fingers. That debate nerd posted our yearbook on Reddit. Akara returns to texting. There's a whole thread trying to find info on Maximoff Hale's boyfriend, and they spotted me in the yearbook's band section. I roll my eyes, not thrilled that people are digging this hard into my past. I consider myself a fairly private person. Not many ever step into my business unless I let them. But I chose to be a public figure. I've known how invasive this could be. Still, the creep factor is real. Let me guess, I say, walking backwards to the open bar stool opposite Oscar. My senior photo is floating around the internet. I had green hair in that picture. All over, Akara nods. Predictable. I drop the mail onto the high top table in a heap. Boyfriend's gonna love that photo, Oscar says to me, being serious. I hold on to that fact and almost laugh. I lean my ass on the bar stool. He'll most likely save it as his lock screen. And then he'll make an excuse about how it's because I hate the picture. Oscar cuts a box open. No, he'll print that one out, Redford. Then he'll frame it and hang it in every house you're in for eternity. Eternity? My brows rise at Oscar. He stares at me right in the eye. And I doubt anyone else but Donnelly realizes how he's not joking right now. And then Oscar nods at me like he knows. He knows what I have with Maximoff isn't temporary. Not just on my end, but on my boyfriend's end, too. It's not something he's expressed before. But I remember that Oscar was at the crash site, holding an umbrella over us. He heard Maximoff and me, saw him say his goodbyes, saw us together, thinking it could have been the last time. Raw emotion squeezes my throat. I nod back. We don't need to exchange any words. I pass an envelope addressed to Charlie that slipped beneath my stack. Thatch, anything good? Donnelly asks. Thatcher, he reminds him, folding a letter. And it's private. Thatcher gently places the letter in a wicker basket labeled Jane. I sort through 6 Get Well Soon cards sent to Maximoff and save them. He'll read each one, even if it takes him hours. The next envelope, I freeze on the return address and the familiar name. Oliveira, I say. Why is your mom sending cards to my boyfriend? I flash the envelope at Oscar. I have one for you, hold on. Oscar lifts a few boxes and grabs a letter. He chucks it at my face. I catch it easily. Oscar nods to me. She didn't know if she should send you 2 separate invites or one together. I went through 7 phone calls in 1 hour, Redford, just to reassure her that 2 were fine. I cock my head. Did you tell Sonia that I wouldn't give a shit either way? Yeah, I reminded her who you are. Oscar grabs 2 more letters, and then she pulled the Pharaoh has no mom on me. Look, she's fucking frazzled that the boyfriend is a famous boyfriend. Additional note, you both need to RSVP separately. Sure. I rip open the one addressed to me and read the invitation. Please join us for the confirmation of our daughter Joanna Raquel Souza Oliveira. My brows arch. For as long as I've known Oscar, I've only met his 18-year-old sister once or twice. I know, Oscar tells me, but it's a big deal. I skim the details. Location, a local Catholic church. Date, a Sunday afternoon next month. I frown. Shit. Probability that I'll be stuck in the hospital working that day equals extremely high. What's worse, years ago I couldn't attend Quinn's confirmation for the same reason. This'll be the second time that I bail on the Oliveira family, and I'm not feeling great about it. Maximoff will definitely want to go, and I would have loved to be his date to this. There'll be others. It reminds me how Maximoff has been planning our first formal date. In my eyes, we've been on 112 dates already. In Wolf Scout's eyes, they were all semi-dates, since I had to keep up the bodyguard charade. I couldn't eat dessert off his plate, couldn't kiss him, couldn't even hold his hand. All restrictions are gone now, and honestly, I love how much Maximoff is treating this like it's all new, all over again. Because there are very few feelings I love more than experiencing firsts with him. I slip the invite into its envelope. Oscar holds out 2 more cards to the guys. Moretti, Kitsuan! Thatcher and Akara grab their invites. I eyed Donnelly, who easily brushes off the rejection. Caring and loving parents worry about guys like Donnelly befriending their children. On paper, he reads like a bad